G'day, Tobia here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national program focusing on union news, worker stories and social justice issues. This program is produced in Naarm, Melbourne for 3CR and broadcast across the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Radio Foundation. On the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, we stand in staunch solidarity with the struggles of First Nations people and respect their continuing connection to country. In this program, we hear from UK-based Greek academic and IWW, Industrial Workers of the World organisers, Panos Theodoropoulos, giving a seminar on his new book, The Precarious Migrant Worker. The seminar was organised by the Migrant Workers Centre in conjunction with the New International Bookshop and was held in Solidarity Hall at Trades Hall on the evening of the 15th of July. The talk focused on the socialisation of precarity and the conditions precarity creates that organisers must navigate. But first, some union news. On Thursday, the 10th of July, CFMEU Administrator Mark Irving released a report titled Violence in the CFMEU, penned by Geoffrey Watson. Immediately following that, on the 13th of July, Premier David Crisafulli announced that his Liberal government would be launching a commission of inquiry into the CFMEU Queensland branch. In Watson's report, amongst a mixed bag of allegations of violence and sexism and recommendations that are eerily reminiscent of the ABCC, that's the Australian Building and Construction Commission, amongst the startling recommendations is one where any CFMEU member who is prosecuted for breaching industrial laws must justify why they shouldn't be disciplined. Quoting from Watson now, members of the CFMEU be advised that from now on, if they are successfully prosecuted for breaches of industrial laws, they will be required to justify why they shouldn't be disciplined for their unlawful conduct. Among the discipline recommended by Watson is the loss of union membership and or employment. This amidst claims by Watson that the CFMEU Queensland branch broke industrial laws not for workers' rights or to get employers to the bargaining table, but simply, according to Watson, to maintain its reputation as an outlaw union. There is also a troubling recommendation calling for the suspension of the activities of the CFMEU Queensland's Youth Crew, a sub-branch of the union that is primarily responsible for the organisation and education of members under 35, assisting them with the knowledge to become future trade union leaders. Moving on to a news item that some may have heard about for some time but might be news to others and is of great importance to migrant workers, about whom the main part of today's program is focused. In the last months of 2024, the painters and dockers, yes, you heard that right, the very same union, renowned for their unbreakable spirit and solidarity with the working class from yore, after a year-long struggle, secured for workers on the Garden Island dry dock, what some are calling a first in Australian migrant working conditions. Amongst a slew of conditions won, they achieved a whopping 10.5% pay rise across the board, as well as domestic violence solidarity leave, which grants workers 10 days of paid leave if they are affected by domestic violence. Most importantly, though, for temporary migrant workers in Australia, the agreement has forced the hand of the employer into agreeing to only bring in workers on visas that have a pathway to permanent residencies, with all visa costs paid for. Furthermore, this new agreement means that workers in this program will be sponsored immediately, as soon as they are eligible by the employer, without any favouritism. And lastly, a bit of international news that reminds us all that we are in the fight together, that we will never truly walk alone, and that solidarity has no borders. In Germany, Munich tram workers against the Bundeswehr, the German military, released a statement, of which I'll read two parts and encourage listeners to read the whole text in their own time. We, tram drivers from Munich, who are organised in the union Verdi, do not accept that we should drive the tram, type T1 car 2804, through Munich as the tram advertises for an alleged career in the Bundeswehr. The slogan of the advertising, do what really counts, already attacks our dignity as workers. Do they want to tell us that what we do, namely driving the tram, doesn't count or doesn't really count? This doesn't affect just us, but all workers. We cannot seriously be expected to drive this insult to all workers through the streets. For us, the following applies. Workers do not shoot workers. Metal workers do not build tanks. Transport workers do not transport military equipment. Tram drivers do not drive Bundeswehr trams. Let's organize resistance together.
You're listening to Stick Together, recorded for 3CR Community Radio, coming to your local community radio station, by the Community Radio Network.
Now, for the meat and the sandwich, we go to Trades Hall, where inside Solidarity Hall on Tuesday the 15th of July, Greek academic Panos Theodoropoulos delivers his analysis on years of researching and working undercover to investigate the social effects of precarity in the workplace, in general, but with remarkable effect on migrant workers in the UK, primarily where his research was focused.
What is very, very important to understand also about the UK is that migrants are entering a context already saturated by precarity. So the UK famously is the country of Maggie Thatcher, one of the first places to institute agency labor. Agency labor is one of the most is one of the first points of entry for migrant workers in the labor market. Also historically a place that unions have been completely defeated, pushed outside even of the realm of the imaginable. So it's not so much that migrants are reducing conditions or reducing wages, it is that they are entering a situation which is already completely atrocious. But there is a fragile congruence between migrants and employers. So when I left Greece in 2011, I needed a very, very quick job. That's all that I needed. And the jobs that I was accessing were already better conditions than what I left behind. In Greece, you're working for, literally peanuts. What do employers need in a hyper-competitive and completely dysregulated environment? They need, they rely on this very, very easy, flexible, obedient, precarious labor force, right? So my desire for a quick job neatly aligns for some time with the desire of the employer for precisely somebody like me. And therefore, we are happily participating in a whirlwind which, destroys our conditions. One important characteristic of migrants is this dual frame of reference. This is a sociological term that refers to the dual frame of reference that you carry with you as a migrant. I was not only interested when I conducted this research into how bad the conditions of migrants are. I was trying to understand what we carry in our brains that allow us to tolerate, rationalize these conditions. An important concept to carry with us as we go through the talk is therefore the dual frame of reference. A lot of the literature on migration deals with migrants only after they arrive in the host country. However, what is important to understand is that migrants do not become subjects only after the act of migration. Migrants are subjects before they migrate. They are humans with priorities, with dreams, goals, etc. So it's very, very important to understand the becoming of the migrant, that process where you're carrying together with you a whole world that actually impacts how you relate to your new surroundings. And of course, inside all of this accumulation of contradictions and complexities, you also have the complete absence of trade unions from most communities and most migrant workplaces. We'll talk about that. So this is simply an introduction. Obviously, for every one of these points, we can write an entire book. And books have been written about every one of these points. But I just wanted to kind of set some foundations. This photograph is a photograph of a printing press that I was working in Bradford. That's how the book starts. The book starts with that printing press. Together with many other people who looked like me, people normally in the UK perceive me as Polish. Agencies send you to places with other Polish people, other Eastern European people. And there is literature on that. Harald Bauder, labor movement, writes a lot about that. So you have a lot of agencies, their tentacles have reached deep into migrant communities, and there is an omnipresent, self-reinforcing circulation of migrants in specific workplaces from specific communities and from specific neighborhoods, etc. So one of those places was the printing press, which was night shifts, and where I found, at that point I had started trying to be organizing my fellow workers. I was 20 years old. And I found that they were blatantly robbing half an hour's worth of every person's wage every single day. And we're talking about 200 workers. So half an hour's worth of every worker every single day is a lot of money that they kept. And this was very, very easy to understand because you could see it in our payslip that half an hour was missing. Given my experience already as a trade union organizer, I knew that this was something that was extremely easy to win. You didn't need a massive campaign. This was there. It was in your face. So when I tried to organize my fellow workers around this, I was met with, you know, a shoulder shrug, an idea of like, this is what they always do, blah, 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 kind of like, okay, shut up and carry on. And this is indicative, right? That there is something extra. It's not simply that we cannot organize because of the barriers of precarity. It's not simply that, you know, language barriers, cultural difficulties, all of the stuff that people are talking about. There is something else, right? Later on, I started trying to organize something like the Migrant Workers Center, but associated with the industrial workers of the world with a little bit of more of a radical twist. And again, it was unsuccessful because there was something there that prevented workers from actually becoming organized. So this was the start of the book. This is what I wanted to understand. I'm not only talking about the problems of precarity and how badly precarity affects people. I'm trying to understand how structure and subjectivity combine to create a specific type of personality and a specific type of socialization. And as I started writing, I found out that this actually extends beyond just migrant workers, and this potentially something that we can understand or we can discuss later on. I'm arguing that precarity and neoliberalism creates a specific type of human, and that it is important to understand this type of human in order to be able to understand why we are in such a bad condition in terms of organizing. So, I will give you a few ideas that are important in the book. Obviously, you need to read the book if you want, but just to kind of establish why I'm talking about the socialization of precarity. I didn't actually tell you what my research was. So, in order to research the barriers to migrant worker organization, I actually went back into the workplaces that I was working in, but this time under the formal blessings of the University of Glasgow and with money from the University of Glasgow. So I basically did undercover work, what we call a covert ethnography. So I went to an Amazon warehouse. I went to a fish slaughterhouse, which I only lasted for one shift. And I talk about this in the book. And the reason that I only lasted for one shift is because of the smell, which enters into your pores and into your body. And I was with a partner at the time, and she basically, I returned from work and she's like, mate, you're sleeping in the living room, you know? But that's really, really important though, because I had the option. I was like, no, I'm going to go do my research somewhere else. I'm not going to, you know, jeopardize my relationship for, you know, this research. However, many people don't have that opportunity. And it really makes you understand the amount of mutilation, mental mutilation that you have to go through. Right? Things that people take for granted. One shift in that place, about 1 month and a half in the kitchen of a Mediterranean restaurant that I call La Dama, various other hospitality stints, which I didn't stay because they didn't have the characteristics that I wanted, or, you know, they were too far away or something like that. And of course, during this time, I was also an organizer. I am still an organizer. Talk to workers, I represent workers in employment tribunals, in cases with their bosses, etc. So the book is kind of like an amalgamation of my PhD research plus 15 years of working and organizing. So the first thing, the first idea that I want to kind of drop is called the agency arena. Migrant workers and most precarious workers in the UK, as I said, the agency is usually their first point of contact with the labor market. And Gabriele Alberti, argues that agencies perform a socializing force, a socializing role. So agencies teach you what to expect of your life in the new economy. You enter the market and they're like, okay, you know, if you are late for half an hour, you lose 1 hour of pay, right? Or, you know, they'll message you at 4 a.m. and they're like, by the way, you're working at 6, you know, and you have to just like go there, because if you don't, somebody else will, right? In the UK, because there is so many workers, there is never a shortage of jobs. What exists is a competition for jobs. So if you are not constantly available, if you're not constantly omnipresent, there is somebody there that will, you know, happily do what you cannot do. In the fish factory, it was amazing because they told us to go there and we went through our induction, etc., which the induction was nothing. And they hadn't even told us what it is that we would be doing. Because clearly, if you had the luxury of demanding information, go somewhere else. You know, we are looking only for people who are so desperate that it's good enough for them that you got the call, right? In Amazon and in the fish warehouse, the offices of the agency were inside the premises. So it's a clear case of like, we're not even trying to hide it. The only reason that the agency exists is because we don't want to hire you directly, so we can fire you, so we can abuse you, etc. In other places, you know, they're hiding it. So you have a situation of constant competition with each other, in a situation where you have a complete lack of rights, in a situation where you have to constantly overexert in order to guarantee the next job, right? Why do you have to constantly overexert yourself? Because you know that you are not only working for money, you are working for building a reputation. Because inside this massive pool of available workers, if I am seen, if the boss knows that Panos is a good worker, and we will hear that term quite a lot, then Panos can get more shifts, right? Because the employer, the agency looks good when they are hiring me out to Amazon or to something else. So even if the need for me, you know, whatever, the Christmas period is over, or we build the 500 bins that we need to build, even when the first job finishes, by being perceived as a good worker, I will be able to be hired again, right? So how are you perceived as a good worker? You need to constantly overexert yourself. You need to constantly demonstrate, right, that you are incredible. When I talk about socialization, I talk about the fact that agencies and Amazon and these big neoliberal companies are trying to create a specific type of worker, right? This is part of the test that you have to get, that you have to take in order to be hired by Amazon, right? And this is the interactive part of the... So we're going to work on this test together. You're trying to be hired by Amazon, right? So you have to strongly agree or strongly disagree or in between whatever with these statements. So if you had to list everything you felt grateful for, would it be a very long list? Do we agree? Do we disagree? What do you... Do people have a big list of things that they are grateful for? So what do we do? What do we put here? Do we strongly agree or strongly disagree? I need more. Exactly. Cool. Do you often waste your time? Do you find it difficult to get started on a task? You know, you are there, you are always ready, you have started the next task before you even finish the one before it. Do you appreciate each day? Yes, right? Do you like it when you get to do something new or different? I'm not going to go through all of them, but basically you get the idea, right? So I made the mistake of answering, you know, some of them neither agree nor disagree or whatever. And I get called by the agency who had sent me to other places, so they knew that I was a good worker, so they wanted me to go to Amazon. And the agency is like, look, man, you failed, but you need to do it again, but make sure that you either fully agree or fully disagree. No in-betweens, right? And then I did it again and I got hired. But you get the idea, right? Again, please indicate a degree which you have felt the following. You know, you need to be appreciative very much, right? Bored, of course, you are never bored, right? And we have to remember that this was for stacking shelves and putting things in paper bags, right? This was Amazon. This is not the most exhilarating job that, you know, you can find. So we are working in Amazon and we know that we are like, I don't know, 100 workers. And we know that out of us, maybe like two or three will get the coveted blue badge. The blue badge is the badge that basically makes you permanent. You're working as a temporary staff, right? And we know also that when the Christmas period finishes or whatever busy period finishes, most of us will be laid off. But we know that one or two people will get the permanent thing. How is this organized? Well, one of the things that happens is that you nominate people. Not for permanence. You nominate them for employee of the week or employee of the month, right? So we are all, I mean, if anybody has read Foucault about the panopticon, etc., I'm not going to go into sociological jargon, but we are all basically monitoring each other. Amazon monitors us, and then we are all monitoring each other under conditions of insecurity and under conditions of competition, right? So you have to nominate your fellow worker. Who are you nominating? Nomination for which leadership principle? So these are the principles that Amazon kind of like expects you to enact, right? Customer obsession, deliver results, bias for action, agile associate. So it's literally, if we had a sociology of neoliberalism, it's kind of like ticking all the boxes of the type of human that they want to create. How would you demonstrate? You only have a few hours, right? And you are constantly monitored by your machine, which is tracking you, tracking how fast you're working, etc. How do you demonstrate customer obsession under these conditions where you already don't even have time to use the toilet? You have to find the extras. So, for example, it would be considered very, very good if, you know, you're busily, you're walking around, you're picking, you're doing stuff. If you have the time and the foresight to actually look at the expiration date and find an expired product and then take it to your manager and be like, look, I found an expired product. Finding an expired product was like finding a nugget of gold. It basically showed that you can do this extra step. You are already doing the extra step, but it showed that you had a little bit, you know, you managed to squeeze water from the stone. Is that the term? And then your role, obviously, because if I nominate somebody and I am just an associate, it's associate is the term that they use for employees, right? You're not workers, you're an associate, because supposedly you have a degree of freedom, right? If I managed to, if I nominated somebody as an associate, okay, maybe counts for something. But if you are, you know, an operations manager, you know, it carries a lot more weight. So this is what I call the agency arena, and obviously you can see that this applies to other jobs also, right? This is the kind of situation that saturates your existence. Now, moving on to La Dama. La Dama is a restaurant, like many other restaurants in Glasgow, supposedly Mediterranean, in reality Albanians, and which of course was very easy for me to be there because I have grown up with Albanians. They migrated to Greece. A lot of Albanians came to Greece when the borders opened after the collapse of the Hoxha regime. And yeah, we grew up together. And then later on during the crisis, we all left. But the Albanians are now migrants twice. They came to Greece, let's say, when they were 5 years old. And then at 25, they left again, right? So one of my favorite sort of quotes with a guy I was speaking with there, I was like, you know, it must be hard to migrate a second time. And he was like, we are always immigrants. We were always immigrants. So this indicates a very, very acute awareness, both of geopolitics, but also of what I call the socialization of precarity. This idea that I have never grown up to expect anything different from my life. I have turned it into a source of empowerment. That shows some a degree of ownership and a degree of empowered ownership. But it also shows resignation, right? There's so much to unpack from that one statement. So we're working with these guys. I was the kitchen porter, so I was washing the dishes, etc. I was working on a sink that you cannot see here. And basically, I'm showing this to basically get you to understand that in this small place, maybe 10 people were working, scrambling all over each other. The life, our life, was only our job. And anybody that works in hospitality and has really worked in hospitality can understand this. Also because of the unsociable hours, also because of the 14-hour shifts and the 16-hour shifts, your life becomes that, right? You have nothing else. Masculinity was really, really important in that job. Because you basically had to be able to take the injuries, you had to be able to take the pain, the fatigue, etc., etc., etc. And also, hierarchies were extremely important. So we were all migrants, but the head chef was Scottish. One time, you know, very, very clearly, the head chef started shouting at all of us, and he started being like, you know, never let it be seen that you are not in control. You might be panicking on the inside, but on the outside, you should always show like you are in control. And this was a 50-year-old guy that was patronizing other people who are like 30 years old, but who still have almost a decade's worth of experience in the sector, right? But it also goes back to this idea about Amazon, right? The performative aspect of you being able to show who you are and why you need the job. And usually these two sectors are not connected, so I'm trying to connect them. We are living in a situation where doing your job is not enough, right? Which is qualitatively different from back, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, when it was enough to do your job, get your paycheck, you know, clock out. No, now doing your job is not enough. Obviously, there is a situation where, you know, as I said, injuries are a fundamental component of your job. In these conditions, I had my first bad burn, right? And it's important what happened with this bad burn. Basically, I screamed, right? Everybody started cheering. That was like the first week I was there, and everybody started cheering. And they're like, oh, you are one of us now, right? You are one of us now. Welcome. This is your welcome to La Dama, right? So again, this idea that we have fully internalized, it's part of the job to be in pain, and it's a measure of your capacity to work, but it's also a rite of passage, right? So as soon as you get burnt, that is when you really start working. If you haven't been burnt, basically they believe that you will be fired in 1 or 2 days because you're not working hard enough in order to risk your body. Another very, very nice statement. I was working like a crazy person, and this guy, Afrim, comes up to me and he's like, you know, how are you doing? And I turn around and I'm like, okay, man, this is a job for two people, you know? And he's like, no, this is a job for three people, but you have to have the ass for the job. The ass, you know? So, again, it's important to be that type of individual. And I will stop belaboring the point. The whole book is about this, the socialization of precarity. So I'm arguing that we have created a situation where, in the absence of unions, in the absence of alternatives, in the absence of empowering radical social narratives, your only capacity to achieve a sense of dignity and self-respect is through your capacity to endure the conditions that you have no choice but to experience. So in all of these absences, with all of these structural constraints, with the absence of a radical movement, your capacity to labor and to endure becomes attached to your identity and to your self-worth. You therefore have the ass. And I argue that this goes beyond simply precarity or precarious jobs as such, right? Nowadays, I am lucky enough to work as an academic, and we hear people humble brag all the time about, you know, how much they work, how much, you know, I haven't slept, etc., etc., etc. This is something that increasingly seeps through as we become socialized to gain our sense of dignity and self-respect through our capacity to endure things that should be unendurable and intolerable.
That's it for Stick Together this week. If you want to catch up with our program, the podcast is available at 3cr.org.au or at your favorite podcast site. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03-9419-8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Tobia, and remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there is a union for you. And until next time, stick together.